VanWe Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. I'm still laughing. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWe Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWe.
And I'm Adam VanWe.
And the reason I'm chuckling is because when we got here, as Howard and
Angela.
Thank you, Angela. I'm laughing rather than thinking. We were setting up as they were tearing down to get out of here, and I set my water bottle down, and Howard grabbed it, so I just reached for it, and it wasn't there. And that's why I was chuckling at myself. So, anyway, enough of that. Down to business. Everybody, welcome back. If you're a regular, thanks for always being here. We need you, and we like you, and hopefully the feeling is mutual. And if you're new to the show, whether you just found it or if somebody's told you about it or you're driving by or whatever, stick around for a while. We've got all kinds of fun things to talk about. Anything that has to do with your money and any comments on the passing scene, we are always willing to talk. Otherwise, Adam and I will discuss all the things that we want to talk about. But anybody who wants to change the direction of the show or liven it up a little bit, or if you just have some questions you'd like answered, just pick up the phone and dial 904-222-TALK. It's 222-8255. A little reminder, Adam and I were just comparing notes, and we are now on VanWe Financial Hour number 182. Time flies, as they say.
No kidding.
It's. I kind of got thinking about that because they were talking earlier on the earlier show about welcoming people back in their fifth year, and we're in our fourth year, and I can't believe either of those. It just seems impossible that that much time could have flown by already. Anyway, we have some very interesting topics today after a market wrap that should be a lot of fun, because I like when Adam wraps a market that was a lot of fun. And this week was a good one. Man, there's so much to talk about. There was news and news and news this week, and most of it was down the line pretty darn good news. So
I don't know. I have a little bit different take on it. But
well, maybe.
There was a lot of news. I agree with that part.
Yeah.
It wasn't as overwhelmingly positive as it has been recent months.
I'll counter some of those things, too. But the point is that much of what we've been saying for the past many months, and probably, I would say, since the election, much of what we've been saying is starting to fall into place now, and you're seeing it in your 401k, and you're seeing it in a lot of just the statistics that are coming out. You're seeing it in a lot of people's pocketbooks. Things are just generally getting better. And for some reason that I will probably never be able to explain, it's leaving a lot of people wondering why. All they had to do is listen to the show for the last year and a half, and they would have expected it by now. But anyway, all that said, Adam can tell you what went on this very profitable week for all of you who are investors.
Yeah, well, not for everyone. It depended what you were invested in. There was definitely mixed results this week. There was a clear winner and a pretty clear loser this week. The tech sector, which has pretty much done nothing but go up for the last, 10 years, was definitely the loser. And that pretty firmly can be pointed to Facebook. They posted less than, stellar results based on what their forecast was. And they gave some actually quite negative guidance. And that really hurt them. A lot of that goes back to the privacy issues that they're trying to address right now. They are promising not to sell your data anymore. Whoops, we were so bad, and now we're going to be good. And I don't really believe them, but they're saying that it's going to affect their business going forward. The stock dropped over 18% this week, and they lost $120 billion in market cap for their shareholders in one day. That was the largest drop in market cap in a single day by any company ever. So this did not help the NASDAQ index, which only dropped 1.1% this week. So again, the benefits of owning an index fund are clear there. If you own Facebook, you lost a lot of money this week. If you own the NASDAQ index fund, you didn't lose that much.
Well, I'm going to add insult to injury.
What's that?
Mark Zuckerberg, after that horrible drop, is now not as wealthy as Warren Buffett. So he's in the same category I'm in, not as wealthy as Warren Buffett.
And he's been selling a lot of stock leading up to this.
A heck of a lot. I was talking about that the last couple of weeks.
Now, if he does that and it's pre-planned, it's not considered insider trading. He has to announce it and then do it later. And so he's unloaded at least $3 billion from what I read of stock.
That's just in recent months.
Yeah, months.
And right before that, $1 billion before. But the point of all that is I wouldn't blame him a bit, because if you want to see a classic case of being under-diversified,
sure, most,
he was.
Most entrepreneurs are.
Sure.
Just because they have one asset that's worth
Once
so much.
Once your stock's been public long enough and you've had a good run on it, why not start to diversify your holdings? For that, I will do nothing but give him credit. Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, he knew something was coming.
Well, I mean, I don't think he
could feel it, I'm sure.
Especially after last quarter, when this was still public information about all the privacy issues, and their stock shot up. So, yeah. I mean, I don't think I don't know if he could have known. I don't know.
I don't think there's anything provable, nor do I want to really look. It wasn't like he was selling hundreds of billions of dollars worth. He sold $3 billion.
Right.
Sold
out
a billion.
Many billion that he owns.
I have absolutely no reservations about that deal at all.
So the other major indexes, the Dow and the S&P, they both stayed in positive territory this week, despite the Friday trading was a drop across the board. The S&P gained 0.6% over the week, while the Dow gained 1.6, so a pretty nice week for the Dow.
It's been playing catch-up.
The Dow and the S&P are now both ahead of NASDAQ for the month of July, but still trailing by a pretty wide margin for the year. The NASDAQ is still the clear leader, up 12.1%. So still a lot of catch-up to do, or a lot more falling for the NASDAQ if they're going to be even. I think that you might see a little bit of both in the coming weeks. The reversal in tech wasn't the only shift that we saw in investor behavior, though. Brazil, and to a lesser degree all of the emerging markets, have seen a nice rebound in July from the beginning of the year. Brazil is up more than 14% in July, but still down more than 7% this year. So you can imagine where they started before this month. Emerging markets as a whole have increased by more than 3% in July and are still down more than 4% on the year. So they were down significantly more, but have made a nice comeback. These moves were obviously influenced heavily by Brazil, so it's not too surprising. It's one of the biggest emerging markets. Oil is another area that we've seen a reversal in. It's dropped almost 4% this year. It's dropped almost 5% in July, but it's up more than 19% this year. This affected the commodities index as a whole, which is up almost 4% this year, but down about 2.5% in July. And the reason I bring all this up is that July has been a very different month than the first 6 months of the year. We're seeing a lot of things that were going up go back down and vice versa. So really need to look at your portfolio and make sure you're invested properly.
I heard something about the probability of that happening. I think it was one Saturday morning around 10:15. I heard somebody say that.
I would have put it at about 100%.
I would too. All right, we got a lot more on the market wrap to do, because some of the information is not just about the market, but what it really means to you as investors and what it means to all of us as Americans. And a lot of that is really good stuff. Then I'm going to tell you a little bit about the divergence of statistics and information, because Adam will give you some statistics and I'll tell you what they really mean. Right after the break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Manway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Manway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Manway.
And I'm Adam Manway.
And this week's trivia question is brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 904-636-7888, and you will probably get a guy named Ken Bales. How about that? The trivia question for today involves the selfsame Facebook, because of its big news this week. I want to know, if you had invested $1,000 at the moment the stock market opened this year, the first trading day right at the open, what would you have today?
$1,000 in Facebook.
In Facebook, just in Facebook. Put $1,000 in, what would you have today? And I'll take that within about $10 either way of the actual answer. All right, more things that were going on in the market today. You want to carry on?
Yeah, definitely. And I still have two winners from trivia over the last 2 weeks. I don't have any cards right now. I'm waiting on Ken to get them to me. As soon as I have them, they will go out to you guys. So, and speaking of trivia winners, I think Chuck was the one that mentioned last week that it was termed busy week by Cramer this week for the amount of S&P companies that are reporting earnings.
Yep.
So we've seen a total of 729 companies, obviously not all S&P companies, but 729 total companies have now reported. And so far, the results are in line with the last couple of quarters on the earnings beat rate, which stands at about 69%, almost 70%. This is slightly higher than the last two quarters and much higher than any quarter before that since 2006. So not bad. But on the revenue side, the news isn't quite as good. 67.3% of companies are beating. Historically, this is a pretty good rate. But the numbers, it's a drop from the last two quarters. So it's a little surprising to me considering that the consumer spending numbers have been rising and that people are feeling better. You would think that you would see the top line numbers for a lot of these companies growing, but we're not seeing it as much as was expected. The really concerning part to me is that the guidance coming out of companies is actually negative right now, and we haven't seen that in more than five quarters. So I'm really, if anything is concerning me, it's that.
I think it's defensive posturing on the part of CEOs.
It could very well be, but the fact is that it exists, and they weren't feeling this way last quarter or the quarter before that. So, I don't know.
Like I said, statistics versus reality, who knows?
The sectors that are beating at the highest rates right now are healthcare and utilities. Utilities, weird. We haven't seen that in a while.
Told you.
And the ones that are the weakest are energy and consumer staples. But consumer staples actually has the highest the best response. So their stocks are trading up the most on when they do beat. So,
does it seem odd to you that people are surprised when consumer staples companies make money in a good market?
No, they really should.
Of course, I mean, they should.
They should make money all the time because they're defensive.
That's the whole point.
But they should make more money in good times.
Yeah. So people are surprised because they all switched over to the discretionary side. The stocks fell. Now the earnings come out and they look great compared to the stock prices. Not surprising me at all.
Yeah. So a little bit more somewhat concerning news. The economic reports for the last year have been more or less overwhelming, well, more or less positive, I'll say. I mean, they haven't all been, but a lot of them have. And, speaking of Chuck, looks like there he is.
Good morning, Chuck.
Hey, good morning, guys.
How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Feeling great after this week.
You know, Steve, you were kind of right about last week. You said there was so much negativity, and, you know, look what happened this week. I mean, Facebook dropping 20% and then Amazon dropping 80 points after they report earnings, and Google rolling over to where it was on Monday. I mean, you're right. I mean, you said last week there was so much negativity in the financial arena, and I think this week kind of continued.
Yeah, it's talk. It's a lot of talk and a lot of bad reactions. But the neat part is a handful of stocks have been driving a lot of the action, especially in the NASDAQ.
Mm.
But every month that goes by, the breadth of the action is getting wider and wider until right now you can take the entire FANG stocks and slam them down 10 or 20%, and you're barely going to budge the market because everything else is doing great. This is the best news for investors like us who are not stock pickers. We're asset allocators. If you are a diversified investor right now, you got to be the happiest person on earth. You're spreading your risk and doing great.
Yeah, it's true. And we actually are seeing that in our second quarter results, too. So we're very pleased with how that went.
Yep. And what's happening, we're finding, is that Q1 was awful.
Yeah.
Well, basically flat down a little.
Yeah.
Q2's been very good for us where we're kind of ahead of everything. But July.
Man, July's been tearing. July, we've been doing really well.
A diversified investor in the month of July is the happiest person in this country, I'm convinced.
Yeah.
And there's 2 days left.
So hopefully that's a trend that continues.
Yep.
Well, here's what it concerns me going forward until the election, and that is we're entering the political worrywart season because we got the Mueller probe, we got the Russia hoax, we got the Cohen tapes, and we got the midterms. And if you recall, 2 weeks before the election in 2016, before Trump won, the market went down 9 days in a row.
Yep.
And because of all the uncertainty. And I think what we're seeing with the FANG stocks the last few weeks rolling over, that they're maybe sending a signal that we're about to go into possibly a declining August, in September. It could be really jittery and choppy going up until the election. That's my concern.
And I don't disagree with you. August is a strange month. It loses money just under half the time. And especially when it's been good, August is tending to be bad. And then it kicks back in later in the year. I got two words for you that probably will verify what you're thinking. October surprise. Now, they usually save those for presidential elections. But as, who was it saying yesterday or this morning? That this was Steve Bannon said, this is actually a presidential election. So unlike most midterms, which are local elections, he believes this is a national referendum on Trump, and I agree with him, and that makes me very happy.
I agree. I agree.
It'll be curious to see how it comes out. Look what happened who was it the other day? He endorsed one of the two candidates, and it had been neck and neck, and the guy won 70-30 or something like that. His word now is starting to take some hold because there's an awful lot of people out there that are working now that weren't 2 years ago. I'm just hoping that they're grateful enough for their jobs that they'll go out and vote. It'll be interesting, no doubt about it.
Yeah, look what happened in Georgia with the governor's race. You got the conservative Trump-backed candidate.
Yeah, that was the one. Yeah. And now he's just done the same thing. This one will be interesting, too. The senatorial race to replace Debbie Stabenow in Michigan. There are they're absolute neck and neck, two conservatives. Their August 7th primary will determine who's going to run on the Republican side. And he just endorsed one of them. And so from dead even, we're going to see if it moves the polls, or better yet, if it moves the votes. But I don't care which one it is necessarily. I think both of them would be great compared to what they've got. And since he did win Michigan, maybe that's a seat we can flip.
And I used to live in Michigan, and Debbie Stabenow is awful. I mean, I used to live up there when she was a senator.
I'm so sorry. Well, welcome home.
well, that was back in 2007, 2006. Okay. Anyway, I want to take a stab at the trivia question.
Please do.
Sure.
I'm going to say, the question was, if you put 1,000 in Facebook, how much would you have now?
Yes.
I'm going to say 1,000.
You are well within the tolerance level, and that is a winner. The reason is, when it closed on the end of last year, it was at 176.46, and when it closed yesterday, it was at 174.89. And it was a change of less than 1%, 0.889% down for the year after that big tumble, which tells me one thing and one thing only. It ran up too far, too fast. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right. Now, the biggest question I've got is, are we going to re-implement our old rule that you can only win once in a month? And since it wasn't announced, the answer to that is no, I'm not. But we will next month.
I'll donate my winnings to charity.
Fair enough.
You're a kind and gentle man and a wonderful listener. Plus, you know how to think, and we like that. That's very good. We have your address, don't we?
I'm an active trader. I mean, unlike you guys, you guys are asset allocators, and I'm a high roller, active trader. You know,
good.
But I appreciate you know, all the information that you lay out, I mean, each week in your show, it's wonderful. But
if you got the time to do it yourself and you got the interest, knowledge, and all that, go for it, I say. For us, we're more the tortoise and the hare type. We're on the tortoise side. But long run, hope it all works for all of us. In this kind of market, we should all get rich, right?
Absolutely.
Appreciate the call as always. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck.
Thanks.
Yeah, that I thought that was the most amazing thing when I looked. I always love to ask questions of myself to which I do not know the answer.
Yeah.
Because that's where the best trivia questions come from. And I said, man, I wonder how much money people have lost on Facebook this year.
The answer is virtually nothing. A couple of things to remember, too. Not all the FANG stocks are down. In fact,
that's
Alphabet
right.
or Google is up 11%, I believe.
Yep.
Year to date up 18%. So,
nice.
And up 4%.
And
this
Amazon
week.
Killed them on earnings.
So yeah.
What the heck? All right, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Van Lee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And I'm just going to tidy up the little market wrap. I mentioned I wanted to talk a little bit about the divergence of statistics and reality. A couple of notable things that happened in this latest group of statistics. The misses outnumbered the hits by about 2-1 this week, but I'm going to tell you what they called a miss. The layoffs missed because they rose to 217,000 instead of 215,000, but the unseasonably adjusted number was 201,300, which is the lowest in recorded history.
That is crazy.
It is absolutely nuts. Let's see what else I'd have in here.
GDP.
Yeah, but I want to wrap that one. This market didn't start really, this hot market of this week didn't start really till Wednesday afternoon about 2:30 when Trump announced they had cut the deal with the EU to begin negotiating away tariffs. The goal, as he stated before and as he stated on Wednesday, is zero tariffs. And if you remember your erudite host saying just 2 or 3 weeks ago, what's the goal of Trump putting a tariff on things? To eliminate tariffs.
Sure, and we've been in agreement on that forever.
Absolutely. Another miss, as they called it, was the GDP number at 4.1% because the expert economists were expecting 4.2%, while everybody else in the world was saying 4% is impossible.
Mm-hmm.
That's called a miss, where they come from. I contend that if it had come in any higher than that, the Fed would already be talking about their next rate cuts and the market would have tanked. It is Goldilocks revisited. That was the perfect number at the perfect time.
It was good.
Now, should you be surprised? How many years have we been saying you cut taxes, you deregulate business, then you get the hell out of the way and we'll take care of the rest of it? Enough said.
So one more thing I wanted to note is be really careful when you're trying to trade based on anything political, because personal feelings about politics do not play out in the market.
That is right.
That doesn't matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat. The market's going to do what the market's going to do. A lot of people I know got out when Trump got in. A lot of people I know got out when Obama was in. And either way, you would have been wrong because the market's been good since the Great Recession. So don't put too much credence on anything political.
I'll do my own mea culpa on that one. I'm so old, I got out when Clinton got in. Missed a great year in the market.
Yep. You just don't.
The most valuable lesson I've ever learned in my life about investing is that Wall Street is now, always has been, and will probably always be controlled by rich Democrats.
Okay.
Once you understand that, you can get over your political leanings.
But yeah, it's just not a good idea, and I've seen too many people make that mistake. So just please be careful about trying to. And the other thing, this is what I really wanted to say, was that the market loves it when there's gridlock in Washington because nothing gets accomplished, and they're free to do, businesses are free to do what they need to do.
Number one thing the market hates, uncertainty.
Exactly.
Yep. In fact, you know, the reason that politics comes in this is because that's where all our money goes. That's where the taxes are done and all that. It's very important insofar as it affects the market. But to have a discussion on politics means that we're pretending to be knowledgeable like Rush and Sean and Mark and the many, many, many people who do this 5 days a week to a degree that you all get sick of it by Saturday. That's why we're going to try to stick to money.
There you go.
Now, one of the great intersections of politics and investing is taxes.
The biggest one.
Biggest, absolutely. So back in 2017, I did a piece about the proposed Tax Cut Act. When it finally got passed, then I did something, I think it was February when they started publishing the actual things that happened. I wrapped that up, and now that it's been implemented and we know more about it, this is what I call part three, which is where are we going now? And the reason it was stimulated is because now the proposal is that this year's round two of tax cuts is on the table, and I want to see what that's going to mean to us. So if you go back to last year, I wrote at the time and said at the time, this is from the original reporting, on February 9th, 2017, President Donald Trump told a gathering of manufacturing CEOs at the White House he would release something in, quote, 2 or 3 weeks that would be, quote again, phenomenal in terms of tax, end quote. While Republican leaders and the White House want to complete the overhaul by the end of the year, Wall Street and the political analysis types think it's likelier that a bill could pass by early 2018. So let's see what happened. First off, the entire process got done in 2017 and time to implement it starting for tax years after December 30, 2017. You always define a tax year as that which starts after a certain date, because not everybody does their taxes on a calendar basis. Some people use fiscal years. So this was a big win for Trump, and all it meant was he was operating at Trump speed, and they still don't know. They still don't understand what Trump speed means. They're flabbergasted. So not only was it a win for Trump, it was a win for 90% of Americans who got their taxes cut. The withholding tables, because they passed this early enough, were able to be put out in time for an implementation between February and March 1st. So there are going to be some people that are slightly over withheld this year because they didn't get the new tax tables for January and February. That will not hurt their feelings when they start getting it back. But what didn't happen was that they weren't getting their entire paychecks until the second quarter, which is why these numbers that just came out finally reflect the actual results of it. And the consumer spending was good. But first, good morning, Ron.
Good morning, guys.
How you doing?
I'm good. Enjoying your program.
Thank you.
Wanted to get your view on emerging markets. Looks like they've been having a tough time this last month. It looks like they might be on the rebound, and I just didn't know whether this is still an opportunity to take advantage of this dip, or whether there's something in the outlook that's a little bit longer term that there might be a little bit more volatility.
I'll let Adam speak to that.
Yeah. Well, if you were going to buy the dip, you may have already missed it. At least the very bottom. There still might be some downside to it to go. But the trend lately in this month has definitely been up. So. Especially with, I don't know if you heard the first segment of the show, but Brazil's been driving a lot of that up. I think I said 14% in the month of July, but still negative for the year. So the trend is definitely in a positive direction. I am neutral, I guess, weighted on emerging markets right now. I'm not pouring money into it. I'm not selling either. I'm keeping it as a small percentage of our portfolios as I normally do. It is an area that's going to be affected by the dollar, the strength of the dollar, and
the trade deals.
And the trade deals. Yep. So, yeah, it's. I guess I could see some potential upside, but I could also see it going the other way, and I am not going to mess with our weights right now.
We're not selling. That's the one thing you can take away from this is we're not selling. Now, yeah, I bought a little bit at the dip, but that's just me. Yeah, I'm a higher risk taker.
I'm glad you guys are saying that, because I'm just not smart enough to figure out all these pros and cons of all these different variables with the dollar and the trade stuff and things like that. I see a lot of risk, at least from this amateur's point of view. So
there's a lot of risk.
Yeah, and anyone who tells you they know what's going to happen in emerging markets is not telling you the truth, because possibly know.
Yeah, when we talk about things like emerging markets, we're talking percentages in a portfolio, one,
right,
two maybe, but no more than that.
I mean, the one thing you know about emerging markets is that it's kind of like buying small cap stocks. It's that over the long, long run, historically, they're more volatile but return better than the S&P 500, but it's really risky to be in them for a short amount of time.
Now, I'll stick my neck out before we have to run one more time and tell you this, and you can take this one to the bank. Avoid Venezuela. Now, if you think that took a genius, you're really wrong. All right,
thanks, well, guys.
Good luck. Stick with it, but don't lose your head. That's the way to go. Thank you. We appreciate it. All right, getting ready to go and come back. Looks like the phones are ringing again, and we will definitely have more to say about the tax cuts and the results of them and just all kinds of fun things going on today. You can't miss a word. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And this is Marshall Gallup.
Hey, guys.
It's almost like being here.
Yeah, another connection between the financial markets and politics.
And what is that?
One of our favorite professors, Elizabeth Warren,
mm-hmm.
thought she had figured out how to get around Congress with the CFPB.
Yes, she did. That's the Consumer Financial Protection Board, which she designed so that she could take the job running it.
Right. And, of course, we had, was it Nick Muldowney or whatever the guy's name
Mulvaney,
was?
Mulvaney.
Came in and did his part to get a lot of that under control. But behind the scenes, my favorite mortgage economic blogger brought up, you know, how many of the seven board members Trump either has appointed or will be in the next month, I think, when a retirement comes in.
I hope it's a number at or greater than four.
Six.
Yay.
And
nice.
You realize the Fed's Open Market Committee, which has a lot of impact,
right,
has a total of 12, and he's responsible for seven of those.
Nice. And he's done a similar job with the appellate courts, too. There are a lot of people.
It seems like to me, the very quiet, behind the scenes, or probably a little bit over a lot of our heads, economic issues are being dealt with without a lot of fanfare, without a lot of screaming, other than I listened to this new gal that they have on from the Bronx. It's like every other word comes out of her mouth. I'm sure she probably does not understand that 2 + 2 = 4.
Really?
The
increase in the defense budget is $700 billion. No, dear. The defense budget is $700 billion. Seriously,
well,
people?
The Elizabeth Warrens of the world are who will challenge our democracy, little d.
Yep.
And fortunately, she's being marginalized.
Thank goodness.
They're doing their job appropriately.
Yep. The good news isn't always slamming into your face like the 4.1% GDP. That's what you're saying. Sometimes you got to hunt for it a little bit. I think that's very wise. Absolutely. And it's music to my ears, fella. All right. Talk to you soon. Appreciate the call.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, these are things. The Consumer Finance Protection Board, this impacts people.
And do consumers need protection from predatory companies sometimes? Yes.
Sometimes.
But the problem with the CFPB is that it assumes that we are all too stupid mm-hmm. to make decisions
and
on our
companies
own.
Are all predatory.
Exactly. And that is absolutely not the case.
Yep. Well, It's changing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, tax cuts that did happen have now come in, and the second quarter was the first time people had their full paychecks. And if you look at consumer spending in the second quarter, it was reflected in a nice, sizable jump. All right, let's go to the corporate tax rate. In 2017, the statutory federal rate was 35%. So it was kind of hard not to get excited when it was going to go down to the 15% that he started with, which I really liked, and then he went up to 20%, and I wasn't quite as happy, but still okay. Well, it wound up at 21%. Every 1% to me matters, but it was done because of the archaic and arcane Byrd rule in the Senate, where they had to come in under this magic number where the idiots at the CBO had to say it's worth less than $1 trillion, or they couldn't pass it. Jeez, don't get me started. All right, next, pass-through businesses at 25%. This one bothered me. This one bothered me big because Trump ran on the principle that all businesses, great and small, would pay the same tax rate. So you take one tax rate to 21%, you take another one to 25%, and it's bad enough. Well, it's even worse because I'd be in the 25.
Well, not just you. Most of America works for small businesses. So,
but Saved by the Bell. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, who came out of small business and understands these things, went to him and said, we need a fix for small businesses. So we got a 20% taxable deduction on business profits under $315,000 annually for sub-S corporations, partnerships, and sole proprietors and so on. Now, the numbers have come in, and it actually does help. And thank you, Senator Johnson. You saved people like Adam and me from what could have been a potentially disastrous increase.
Yeah, so the problem with this one is they might have gone too far. And not in my opinion, but just because I see the trend right now that people are converting themselves to sub-S or 1099 employees and then starting a sub-S corporation just to take advantage of this. And trust me, they're watching it.
Oh, yeah, oldest rule in the book. Pass a tax law, I'll tell you how to get around it.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
All right, the overseas profit repatriation tax. That means companies who have earned money and paid taxes on it overseas leave it there because they were going to get soaked 35% for bringing it home. Well, that's no good. So they said we're going to do it. We'll give them a one-time lower tax rate, which I loved. It's been done before between 4 and 7%. The numbers came in at 15.5% for cash, which I thought was way too high, and 8% for non-cash tangible assets, which I thought was too high. Now, let's see what actually happened. In the first quarter, over $300 billion was actually repatriated, and that was right after the law was passed. Now, if you've ever been in a corporate boardroom, you know nothing happens real fast over there. I'm expecting the pace of that repatriation to increase because the boards will be able to say, okay, we're weighing it now 15.5% versus leaving it over there. Bring it home.
So that's
watch for that to improve.
Over 45 billion in tax revenue, right?
Yeah,
if it was.
Exactly. And think what that money's going to do. The growth on that money, the compounding of creating jobs and investments, is going to be phenomenal. All right, the personal tax changes. This one had me a little scared too because they were proposing 12% and the lower rate before had been 10%. I don't like that. Well, by the time it got said and done, guess what? It was 10%. Plus, they broadened the brackets. But here's some more good news. They introduced a couple of new brackets, 22 and 24%, for even more income, and those had not existed before. The next rate up was 25%. So now a couple filing jointly can make up to $315,000 taxable income before there's one penny taxed above 25%.
Mm-hmm.
That, where I come from, is called, you ready for this? There's a name for that. In technical economic terms, here it is. It's called middle-class tax cuts. Hear that, Chuck and Nancy? Huh?
So the argument against this one that you're hearing a lot is, but they didn't reduce the number of brackets. But that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's such a silly argument. It's just completely irrelevant. I would rather have 100 brackets that were all lower than what I used to pay than have two that were high, that were equal or higher.
And you plug the number into your computer and it tells you what you owe.
Exactly.
Just like that. And it happens just as fast with 100 brackets as with one or two.
No doubt.
Just a little harder to do in your head. That's the only thing. All right, the larger standard deduction came in as promised. They wanted to go to 12,000 single, 24,000 married. Now, I do think that they underplayed the elimination of the personal exemptions, and it could have hit families, large families, lots of kids, real hard. But thank you, Senator Rubio, throwing in an improvement in the child tax credit, which offset a great deal of that. All in all, good thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, eliminate most standard deduction or itemized deductions. The a lot of them were. Some were changed, some were eliminated. They left medical in and made it better, but they sunsetted it after 2 years, and I'll talk more about that next week. The state and local taxes, what they call SALT, were capped at $10,000 annually, which doesn't hurt a lot of people, but it hurts a lot of other people, and I'll talk more about that next week. Retirement savings was basically unchanged. The estate tax was doubled. Now, I wanted it eliminated. I always have. But when we doubled it, what it did, it's almost $23 million now for a married couple. It has taken so many people out of ever having to worry about it that all in all, I got to give them a B-plus on that one.
Yeah, I agree.
Not bad at all. And then, of course, they also indexed the gift taxing and generation-skipping transfer tax to the new estate tax exemption range, which makes it so much better. So now your estate planning is a lot easier. And we're going to go into that in the next couple weeks, too, about what it means for estate planning for normal people. But here's the bottom line before we go. The average American couple is currently receiving a tax cut of $2,917 annually. I'll take mine.
I'll take it.
Will you take yours?
Absolutely.
All right. Lots more on where we're going in the new proposals next week. So tune in then. When we talk about more wonderful things to come, look for another good week in the market. I can't see any reason why these economic numbers aren't going to make us all continually more and more and more happy. So things are good. We love it. All right. See you next week. This is the Bandley Financial Hour.